Fish Radio.
The headlines: Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei highlights the significance of elections in the country and warns about the enemy's plots to create rifts between the people and the Islamic establishment. Iran marks the 32nd anniversary of the passing away of the founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini. And at least 15 Palestinians are wounded by Israeli soldiers after they took part in an anti-Israel settlement protest in the occupied West Bank. Hello and welcome, everybody, here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is the World News. Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has addressed the nation on the 32nd anniversary of the passing away of Iran's Islamic Republic's founder, Imam Khomeini. During his speech, Ayatollah Khamenei highlighted the importance of elections in Iran, including the upcoming presidential vote. Let's take a look at some of his remarks.
Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei called for a huge turnout of Iranians in the June 18 presidential election. He said existing shortcomings should not discourage people from having political participation. The leader said if there are disorders, inefficiency, and weakness in the management of the country, people should compensate for that by making the right choice. Ayatollah Khamenei also called on the candidates running for president not to make empty promises. He said such pledges are harmful to the country and will discourage people. The leader also advised people to avoid making a decision only based on the candidate's pledges. He said people should consider deeds rather than words of the presidential hopefuls, and they should review the candidate's background to see if they can fulfill their promises. Ayatollah Khamenei urged influential figures to encourage people to participate in the election. The leader also warned against the enemy's attempts to create rifts between the Iranian people and the Islamic establishment. Also in his remarks, the leader spoke about the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, who passed away 32 years ago. Ayatollah Khamenei said Imam Khomeini viewed elections as a manifestation of people's will and stood firm against hegemony and corruption.
Campaigning for the upcoming presidential election is underway in Iran due to the coronavirus pandemic. Election campaigns are held in the form of televised addresses and debates. Yusuf Jalali reports.
The race for the top executive post in Iran rages on among the seven candidates who appear before reporters every day to outline their plans. Plans for a brighter future, stronger economy, and more opportunities for the youth. So journalists rarely ask contenders about what they have done in the past, but what they will do should they win the election.
The first move that my administration will focus on is to uproot poverty in the first year. If poverty is eliminated, our people will excel in culture and enlightenment.
I will pay special attention to the youth and their problems. Unemployment is now the first and foremost issue of our youth. As an economist, I believe that if we remove the uncertainty in our market, we can easily create jobs. Also, I will allow young experts to run at least 50% of my cabinet.
All of the candidates have so far spoken of problems that they blame on the incumbent government. Problems that range from inflation to unemployment. Some of the contenders find the root cause of these problems in the fact that outgoing President Rouhani has put all his eggs in the basket of the 2015 nuclear deal, which is now hanging by a thread.
Nobody can ignore the negative effects of the sanctions on our economy. But at the same time, we cannot reach out to our enemy and appeal to them to lift the sanctions. This method has not worked and will not work. We cannot pin hope on the lifting of sanctions to fix our economy. We should have relied on our own domestic capacities to have a resilient economy.
This year, the coronavirus pandemic has curtailed election rallies and electoral tours. Based on the guidelines set by the Coronavirus Combat Committee, campaigns are conducted through televised debates between candidates, feature documentaries, and speeches. Campaigning will continue until 24 hours before Election Day on June 18th. The Islamic Republic holds an average of one election each year since its establishment in 1979. Now candidates call on Iranians to turn up en masse for this year's election, as in the previous rounds. since high voter turnout is translated into a seal of approval for the legitimacy of the Islamic establishment. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iran's presidential candidates are outlining their plans ahead of the June 18th election. This as people are weighing up who can be the most qualified candidate to run for the country, that is, for the next 4 years. At the moment, what seems to be the issue of very high significance for people is the candidate's foreign policy agenda. And the following report will take a look at how the presidential hopefuls are planning to deal with the rest of the world.
One of the contenders for Iran's presidency, Ebrahim Raisi, has outlined his foreign policy agenda, saying he intends to have better interaction with the world. Raisi says his plans are based on principles such as honor, wisdom, and expediency set out by the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Raisi says four major points his administration will try to address include the Iran nuclear deal or the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, better known as the JCPOA, Iran's regional influence, economic diplomacy, and last but not least, targeted foreign relations. Saeed Jalili is another candidate running for presidency. The 55-year-old, who has served as Iran's top nuclear negotiator, says his foreign policy approach mainly focuses on anti-Iran sanctions. Jalili says lifting sanctions, circumventing the measures, and rendering them ineffective for good are issues to be addressed. Another candidate for the top executive post, Amir Hossein Ghazizadeh Hashemi, however, says the main focus of his government will be to establish and boost trade relations with African and Latin American countries. He also says his administration will make the best use of foreign assets to improve the economy. Mohsen Mehr Alizadeh, who previously served as Iran's vice president, says a development-oriented foreign policy will be amongst priorities of his government. Mehr Alizadeh says boosting bilateral and multilateral relations with Iran's neighbors is also part of his agenda. The 64-year-old candidate says boosting Iran's economy is possible amid sanctions. Former central bank governor of Iran, Abdel Nasser Hemmati, says he would work to boost Iran's foreign policy. Hemmati has also vowed to get the Financial Action Task Force, or the FATF, passed in the Expediency Council if elected president. Another presidential hopeful, Mohsen Rezaei, has stressed the need to strengthen ties with Iran's immediate neighbors and other regional countries in order to improve the economy. The presidential candidate has vowed to work hard for democratic institutions and invoke optimism amongst people that their votes count. Rezaei has also called for strengthening the country's defense capabilities in the face of any potential foreign threat. Last but not least is Alireza Zakani, the 56-year-old politician who is currently serving as member of Iran's parliament, says foreign policy is the fourth axis of his plan. Zakani says he wants to turn Iran as a role model for the region. He says foreign policy must be adopted to bring dignity, adding that it's also very important to use the capacity of Iranians abroad.
Friday marks the 32nd anniversary of the passing of the founder of Iran's Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini. The following report takes a look at his life and his ideology.
Ruhollah Mousavi Khomeini, better known as Imam Khomeini, was born on the 24th of September 1902 in central Iran. He studied to become a religious scholar and in 1963 became a marja, the highest religious authority in Shia Islam. Imam Khomeini was an outspoken critic of the Pahlavi regime that ruled Iran before the Islamic Revolution. In 1963, he was arrested by the regime security service for his anti-Shah speeches. In 1964, Imam Khomeini was sent to exile, living in Turkey, Iraq, and then France, from where he urged his supporters to overthrow the Shah. On February 1, 1979, he returned to Iran, and 10 days later, the Pahlavi monarchy collapsed. Imam Khomeini believed that Iran should strive towards self-reliance. He viewed certain elements of the Western culture as inherently decadent that have a corrupting influence upon the youth. His ultimate vision was for Islamic nations to converge into a single unified power in order to avoid alignment with either the West or the East, and he believed that this would happen at some point in the future. Imam Khomeini intended to reconstruct Muslim unity and solidarity, so he declared the birth week of Prophet of Islam as the Unity Week. He then declared the last Friday of the fasting month of Ramadan as the International Quds Day. Imam Khomeini was among the world's top leaders to influence boycotts against Israel starting in 1967. After the Six-Day War between Israel and the Arabs began, he called any relationship with Israel haram or religiously prohibited. This message was, in a way, the initiative that led to pervasive boycott Israel campaigns. The Iranian charismatic leader has been praised by many prominent international figures.
The thoughts and ideology of Imam Khomeini transcend barriers of time and place. He has left long-lasting impressions on the world history.
Imam Khomeini was not only a great leader for the Iranian people, but also a leader for all the freedom movements across the globe.
Imam Khomeini's influence on the world's affair was so much that even some of his enemies praised him.
Ayatollah Khomeini, through a well-thought-out plan, created crisis in the Western world. He made plans with such a lightning speed that political analysts and leaders had no time to make counterplans. Nobody could foresee the Imam Khomeini's decisions.
Imam Khomeini passed away in June 1989 at the age of 87. More than three decades after his passing, the Islamic Republic of Iran continues his school of thought in support for resistance against oppression.
Political commentator Sarvo Zuhila Rezvi says the late founder of Iran's Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, tried to put an end to all sectarian divisions in the Islamic world and beyond, and called on the oppressed people to unite against the oppressors.
No one can deny the effect of the revolution of Imam Khomeini in the ongoing, you know, issues of today, after, you know, several decades that had passed from the demise of the Imam Khomeini. We're still observing that. Still things are changing based on the, you know, revolution that Imam brought in Iran, and of course its, its regional effects and global effects across the globe. If you look at the mindset of the people before the revolution, before the changes, the mindset of the people was a sectarian mind, and then Imam is changing and shifting this sectarian mind to a mindset that is dividing the world to not Shias and Sunnis, not even Muslims and non-Muslims, but to oppressors and the oppressed, but to those colonial rules and colonial powers who are going to misuse and colonize the rest of the world. And Imam then is calling upon all the free men and women of the world to get together, to strengthen their power, to stand firm against those oppressors.
The Yemeni people have rallied in the northern city of Sa'ada in a show of resistance against their enemies. Demonstrators chanted slogans and slammed policies of the U.S. and its allies against nations in the region. They also expressed their sympathy with the people of Gaza that was hit by 11 days of Israeli attacks last month. The Yemenis condemned the Israeli killing of Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip. In their final statement, the Yemeni protesters called on all Muslim nations to boycott American and Israeli products as part of efforts to resist their aggressive policies. The statement also called on the Yemeni people to stand against aggressors. Israeli forces have injured at least 15 Palestinians holding an anti-settlement protest in the northern occupied West Bank. The protest was held in the village of Beita near the city of Nablus following the Friday prayers. The Palestinians were protesting against the construction of a new settlement outpost on top of Sebeh Mountain. Israeli forces attacked the protesters with live bullets and tear gas. The Palestinian Red Crescent Society said one of those injured was in critical condition. All Israeli settlements are illegal under international law. The UN Security Council has condemned Israel's settlement activities in the occupied territories in several resolutions. And India has logged over 132,000 new COVID infections in 24 hours, raising its total caseload to over 28.6 million. The Indian Health Ministry also confirmed more than 2,700 new deaths for the past 24 hours. The latest figure pushes the country's death toll from the virus to over 340,000. India has the world's second largest COVID caseload after the United States. The South Asian country's case tally jumped after infections began to rise in February. They reached their daily peak of over 414,000 on May the 6th. Now daily cases are witnessing a downward trend as a vaccination program goes on. So far, more than 3% of the population in India has been fully vaccinated. Iran has reported 155 more COVID-19 fatalities in 24 hours, raising the overall death toll to around 81,000. The health ministry also reported over 9,000 new infections in the past day, bringing the total caseload to over 2.95 million. Nearly 2.5 million have so far recovered from the disease. The government imposed strict nationwide restrictions in April following a surge in infections and deaths. Iran also launched its national vaccination campaign in early February. More than 4.1 million people have so far received the first dose of a COVID vaccine nationwide. Over 530,000 people have been fully vaccinated against the deadly virus. The World Health Organization has warned about failure to tackle the COVID-19 pandemic unless wealthy nations do more to advance their vaccine donations. A WHO senior advisor said the developed countries should make doses available immediately to make up for disrupted supplies to the organization's COVAX scheme. He said those nations have so far donated 150 million of their surplus doses via COVAX, but the program needs twice that much. He added that they should provide surplus doses to poorer countries instead of giving them to less vulnerable groups such as children. The advisor praised a newly announced U.S. plan to quickly share 25 million doses and encouraged other countries to follow suit. The COVAX sharing scheme has a gap of around 200 million doses caused by Indian vaccine supply disruptions and manufacturing delays. China has blasted the U.S. for meddling over the 1989 Tiananmen incident, urging Washington to face up to its own rights abuses. Wang's remarks came after U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken tweeted on Friday saying that Washington would honor those killed in the Tiananmen crackdown and that it would continue to support Chinese rights activists. On June 4, 1989, Chinese security forces clashed with protesters in Tiananmen Square during a crackdown. Beijing has defended its actions, saying it was the right thing to do in the wake of unrest. Sino-U.S. relations have sunk to historic lows, with the world's two biggest powers clashing over issues ranging from trade and human rights to Hong Kong and Chinese Taipei. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Here at IRIB English Radio, express our heartfelt condolences to all of our listeners. On the 32nd anniversary of the passing away of the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul.
Imam Khomeini, Perpetual Reality. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. 32 years have passed since the passing away of the great founder of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him. Some would think that through the lapse of time, the Imam's memory would lose importance and be cast into oblivion. But the developments in the world have increasingly revived his memory and his path among masses in different parts of the world. Human being thought that the ups and downs of the 20th century would end in prosperity, freedom, and peace in the 21st century, but despotism, supremacy, excessive demands of arrogant powers, and oppressive regimes in the world have deprived mankind of these blessings. It is here that the call of Imam Khomeini reverberates in the collective mind of mankind when he said that the only way of salvation is to return to the teachings of the divine messengers, namely Abraham, Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. In view of Imam Khomeini, the gravest crimes of human history originated in ambition and love of position and power. Imam Khomeini's way and life was unique. From the time of youth, his education and spiritual and intellectual characteristics were quite different from political leaders. He started a very simple life in tough conditions. He was engaged in self-building and self-purification since his adolescence. He spent several decades of his life in education and research. The Imam was not a member of any political party, yet he was the most political religious figure of the modern era. He called on the godly nature human beings and invited them to struggle for determining their fate. He used to address nations and believed that if the great developments take place by nations, they will be invincible. If the dormant souls are awaked, they will stage revolution and will dismantle injustice and oppression. Imam Khomeini never thought of his vested interest. What caused him to rise up against the status quo was the absolute submission of Pahlavi regime to the West and the dominance of the Western culture on every aspect of the Iranian society. The dominant thought, even among many ulema and university professors, was that religion, and Islam in particular, is separate from politics and ruling. They thought that Islam is restricted to personal worships and rituals and has nothing to do with political and social affairs. Imam Khomeini believed that this dangerous thought has been promoted after the Prophet's passing away. He said, "This was a devilish scheme that has been designed since the Umayyad and Abbasid eras. And after that too, every government that has come to power has confirmed this matter. And as the East and the West have found their way into the Islamic states, this issue has been rampant that Islam is a personal matter between the servant and God, and politics is separate from Islam. And a Muslim shouldn't interfere in politics, and ulema shouldn't enter politics." Imam Khomeini also said, "In the advent of Islam, politics and religion were intermingled." Elsewhere in his remarks, he said, "The slogan of politics is separate from religion is a colonialist propaganda which wants to prevent Muslim nations from interfering in their own faith." The reason why human masses and people from different walks of life welcomed Imam Khomeini's words is that he addressed the godly nature of people. He never tried to be the mouthpiece of a race, ethnicity, nation, or group. His discourse was that of a God-seeking person who was after sublimity and salvation of the whole mankind. He spoke plainly with the language of the oppressed and downtrodden strata. Imam Khomeini's inexhaustible fight against injustice, his firm perseverance against tyranny and excessive demands of big powers, his intransigence before oppressors, and his respect for human dignity were the outstanding features of his discourse. The Imam, in order to establish a religious government and return religion to the political scene, created the belief that the Islamic laws have natural and executive value in every place and time. Because they have been designed on the basis of human nature, and the human nature is unchangeable in every time and place. It is similar to the love of mother to her child, which will never change throughout history. Imam Khomeini, as the wakeful thought of the Islamic Ummah, was a religious scholar. He was a prominent jurisprudent and a brave leader. He staged the greatest revolution in the modern era and founded a religious state based on the teachings of Islam. This state is called the Islamic Republic of Iran and is well known everywhere in the world, although the U.S., as the symbol of global arrogance and its equally corrupt ally, the Zionist regime of Israel, have done their utmost to extinguish this beacon of freedom and dignity in the world. Imam Khomeini raised the issue of dignity and Muslims and empowerment of the oppressed and downtrodden in the world. Following the footsteps of Imam Khomeini in the fight against oppressors and domineering system has opened a new path ahead of the nations. This path will lead to the reappearance of the savior of mankind, Imam Mahdi. Imam Khomeini said about this, "Almighty God has promised to make the oppressed dominant over the oppressors and make them the leader. Almighty God's promise is near. I hope that we will witness the materialization of this promise and the oppressed will overcome the oppressors." Dear listeners, now 32 years after the departure of Imam Khomeini from this world, it is quite clear that the Islamic Revolution has not resulted in just dismantling of a despotic regime. Today, the political literature in the world and officials of various countries speak of the impacts of the Islamic Revolution on the global equations and the challenges that this revolution has caused in the political, cultural, social, and economic spheres. The revival of religious identity and dignity of Muslims in the world and the emergence of the signs of formation of the glorious Islamic civilization are the practical outcome of the Islamic Revolution. Imam Khomeini is a perpetual reality that continuation of his path will grant freedom, independence, dignity, and salvation to mankind.
It's Parliament that makes the headlines with legislation. But no bill passed by Parliament or Majlis becomes law without going through the Guardian or Constitutional Council. Less in the spotlight normally, there are times when this Council of Elders becomes the highlight of the day. One of those times is elections, be they parliamentary, presidential, or assembly of experts elections. What exactly the function of the Guardians of the Constitution is when it comes to elections is the focus of our study in this episode. The 12-member Guardian Council of Legal Experts supervises elections and approves or disqualifies candidates. It also has veto power over legislation. It's something of an upper house, so omitting it from Iran's legal system would be unthinkable. However, it does come under scrutiny and criticism from time to time, especially with the 2021 elections. I'm Leila Faramayazi. The council chaired by Ayatollah Jannati approved only 7 candidates to run for president in the June 18th election. That was out of a total of 592 prospective candidates, 552 men and 40 women. The list of candidates or finalists was communicated on May the 25th and has since kept eyebrows raised with foreign critics who incessantly bring the Conservative Council under attack. Mr. Atrian Far is among those at home expressing displeasure at the Guardian jurist selection. He is a reformist and member of the executives of Construction Party, who met with us at Press TV Studios.
هیچگاه نباید نهادهای حقوقی به خصوص شورای نگهبان جدگیری سیاسی داشته.
Legal institutions, especially the Constitutional Council, must never be politically biased. The council was expected to adhere to this standard for the upcoming election. When a large number of people, at least 40 prominent figures among them, had registered to run for president, the political bias resulted in the elimination of almost every candidate who had political links with the reformists or was favored by like-minded institutions and were barred from the race. The situation at this point is so that out of 7 esteemed presidential candidates, 5 definitely belong to the principalists, and the 2 others don't represent the reformists.
Well now, the more conservative or principalist walk of Iran's political spectrum wouldn't want to leave that unanswered. I got to talk to a couple of parliamentarians to hear them on whether the Guardians might have made a political decision, when in fact they are to vet candidates based on their legal credentials and existing documents. Mr. Nowruzi is vice chief of the Parliamentary Legal Committee.
Anyway, if the reformists hadn't introduced weak or problematic figures, they would definitely have the chance to see their candidates approved. I'm not a member of the Constitutional Council, but my question is, why didn't the reformists introduce Mr. Arif? Why didn't they put forth figures who could be qualified to run? Anyhow, they endorse people like Mr. Jahangiri, who have their own problems. Mr. Jahangiri has to be accountable for the economic problems in the past 8 years, because he has been the first vice president, a position comparable to the country's prime minister. He can't come forward and complain. He must first explain what he has been doing in the past 8 years and then run for president.
Besides Mr. Raisi, the judiciary chief, other principalists approved to run are Saeed Jalili, former Supreme National Security Council secretary and nuclear negotiator, Mohsen Rezai, expediency council secretary, as well as MPs Ali Reza Zakani and Amir Hossein Ghazizadeh Hashemi. Non-principalists are Abdel Nasser Hemmati, Central Bank of Iran former governor, who's a moderate, and Mohsen Mehralizadeh, reformist, former vice president. Registration and vetting and campaigning make for an intricate electoral procedure, intricate like Iran's political system of several member bodies, each presiding over the other. Everything is detailed and foreseen in the hope of leaving no room for error, But then, with too many hands at work, it can, like bureaucracy, trip itself up. And there's human error that can presumably occur with these supreme deciding bodies. Sometimes, as in the case of Larijani, despite the fact that he is a veteran, the Supreme National Security Council's decision to ban first-degree relatives of candidates from studying abroad leads to disqualification.
We don't have anything called disqualification in the presidential election. In fact, we assess the qualification of those who run. This doesn't mean that those who aren't approved are unfit or incompetent for other tasks or positions. What Article 155 stipulates is that the qualified president must meet a set of conditions, including being a political or religious figure, being a resourceful manager, being a citizen of Iran and of Iranian origin. Members of the Constitutional Council consider these conditions for every candidate and finally announce whether or not the individuals are eligible to run for president after a secret ballot.
Mr. Zakir is chief of the Parliamentary Article 90 Committee.
Mr. Larijani has been more of a principalist than a reformist. If he's rejected, it wasn't because he was a reformist. If candidates request explanations about why they have been disqualified, the Constitutional Council can tell them. The candidate can also make it public. There's no legal prohibition against it. But there is usually a convincing reason and expert work behind the decision.
Sometimes the case of Mr. Mehr Alizadeh can find itself repeated. He was disqualified in one election due to the fact that a case was pending against him, but in the next round he was approved due to acquittal.
According to Article 115 of the Constitution, the president must meet certain conditions. One is that he must be of Iranian origin. The other is that he must be a political or a religious figure and be a resourceful manager. None of these conditions are biased for or against any group, camp, or political organization. The conditions consider the candidate's talents, policymaking, and management capabilities in running the country and solving its problems.
It's an executive hand that's in charge of jump-starting and finalizing the election process in practice. That's the Interior Ministry. Pursuant to Article 48 of the election law, executive boards send the names of candidates to four authorities for screening. Those are the judiciary, the Ministry of Intelligence, the police, and the Civil Registration Organization. Now, how Guardian Council members themselves are appointed and what the composition of the body looks like, you may care to know. Of the 12 jurists, six of them are experts in Islamic law, and they are appointed by the leader, who is himself elected by the Assembly of Experts. The other six civil jurists are nominated by the Supreme Judicial Council and appointed by Parliament or Majlis. The Council also has six lawyers recommended to Parliament by the head of the judiciary to be confirmed and included in the Council.
Following the Islamic Revolution of 1979, although the Constitution has it that the members of the Guardian Council must be changed every 6 years, 3 years after the establishment of the Guardian Council, six members from amongst both batches of the jurists, Islamic and civil, were changed. This policy was adopted in order to prevent any temporary closure of the Guardian Council. This way, the council will always have six definite members. As a result, the system is so that six members of the 12 members of the Guardian Council undergo a reshuffle every 3 years.
Regarding the council's participation in national events, our MPs speak of how it safeguards the Islamic revolution through these, say through elections.
According to the Constitution, the president is the country's second most important figure after the leader. He's the one who has to execute cultural, social, political, commercial, monetary, financial, banking, petrochemical, and other laws. Any candidate who wins the election must be able to bring everyone together from across the country. If this happens, the revolution thrives and the country will be united. If the elected president is chosen based on meritocracy, the country will be united
free of conflict and revolutionary. The Constitutional Council is responsible to ensure that. The Council has thought for some 800 hours to select which candidate can run the country for the next 4 or 8 years.
I said the Guardian Council is inseparable from the country's system of legal and political governance as it stands. Interestingly, even its critics, at least domestic political ones, don't criticize it as a body.
We shouldn't criticize the Constitutional Council itself. As the leader of the Islamic Revolution has also stressed, we should protect the prestige and identity of the legal institutions as enshrined in the Constitution. But we can criticize the performance of the Council's members. During the leadership of late Imam Khomeini, if the members of the Constitutional Council made any mistakes, he would criticize them and advise them to correct their behavior. We should question those who didn't vote for Mr. Larijani and ask them to explain what their argument has been.
Now, whatever strategy or insight might leave the last man standing, it's all for elections to be held, for the people to choose a new president. Incumbent President Rouhani's second term is coming to a close, with very little time left for the Vienna JCPOA talks to conclude in sanctions relief for Iran. Any success the outgoing government has with the talks would be cause for greater voter turnout mid-June. I'm only half done, but it's time to give other media outlets time for their say as well. So for a quick media review, stay tuned. And here's words they put it in. Fars News reads, leader asks Iranian people to stage large turnout in elections. During a meeting via video link with members of the Iranian parliament on Thursday, May the 27th, Ayatollah Khamenei first thanked all individuals who were nominated to run in elections. Many of these people undoubtedly entered the scene because they felt a responsibility to, he said. Secondly, Ayatollah Khamenei said, I have to doubly thank those whose qualification was not approved and was not ascertained by the council and who reacted nobly. Some of them even encouraged people to participate in the election. The leader said the fact that the Constitutional Council had not been able to ascertain the qualification of certain candidates did not mean that those individuals were not qualified. They may even be highly qualified. What it meant was that the council had not been able to determine such a qualification based on its own recognition, the reports, and the available tools. Dear Iranian nation, election takes place in one day, but its outcome is there for several years. Participate in the election. Consider the election as belonging to yourselves, because it does belong to you, Ayatollah Khamenei said. Tehran Times quotes the council's spokesperson, Kat Khodayi, predicts high voter turnout. In an interview with Press TV on Tuesday, Abbas Ali Kat Khodayi said, when it comes to verification and vetting, the impact of the Constitutional Council's votes on the people's participation is very little. That, he said, is what opinion polls conducted by state institutions show. It's usually most likely about economic issues and maybe some political and social issues. He said the council carries out its responsibilities based on the Constitution as the fundamental law of the country, and is duty-bound to do the vetting process. If a person is vetted and not approved, we are not to blame. We have to act on the basis of law. We have Adna, referring to a Sunni cleric, saying vigilant nation attends election to decide for its fate. A Sunni Friday prayer leader in southeastern Iran believes that the Iranian nation are vigilant and will participate in the upcoming presidential election across Iran to decide their own fate. Molavi Abdurrahim Rigyanpur, Sunni Friday prayer leader of Nejav, a city in southeastern Iranian province of Sistan-Balochistan, made remarks in an interview with IRNA. Participation in the elections is a religious duty, and respect for objectives of Imam Khomeini, the father of the Islamic Revolution, the Sunni cleric said. During the past years, enemies, arrogant powers, and global Zionism have in vain been trying to downgrade the people's participation in Iran's elections, he added. Despite the sanctions, Iran will powerfully stand on its own feet, the Sunni cleric stressed. That would be it for this segment. Do stay tuned. Foreign policy will no doubt pose pretty potent challenges for any new president and his cabinet. Let's hear what they will face from our show guests.
The president must run the country. It is not possible to run a country without interacting with the world. We have had relationships with all the world when both principalists and reformists were incumbent, with a few exceptions like the occupying Israel regime. As a matter of fact, if principalists win the upcoming election, they would have greater interactions with the world. We want to maintain our country's authority.
Now, the main challenge any new president would face in this country has got to be economic. That is why the JCPOA talks matter. To Iran, the whole point of the talks is that U.S. and E3 economic sanctions be lifted off this country. Only then will a U.S. return to the JCPOA or Iran nuclear deal even matter to us.
You see, our economic structure is really in shambles. Our currency and tax system are in disarray. There are so many unemployed youths. 12 million young people aren't getting married because they don't have a home. While the Minister of Roads and Urban Development says he doesn't believe in cheap housing options just for the sake of being stubborn and based on his personal beliefs, it's evident that the country won't thrive. I think the Constitutional Council can intervene here and choose capable candidates fairly, regardless of their political orientation. They should approve people who won't make the society bipolar or tripolar or sow discord and only consider themselves.
Interestingly, not all Iranian authorities see sanctions as wholly bad. In fact, the absolute majority see a use in sanctions alongside the vice. That is getting closer to independence, because with deprivation comes resistance economy. That's moving to mobilize the country's industry, hence independence. That is not to say sanctions are not a nuisance, of course, even to domestic manufacture. Developing domestic manufacture can be achieved with technology transfers and investments made possible by the lifting of sanctions. This in turn would enable greater growth and lucrative exports for Iranian industries. And fortunately, in the absence of Western alliance, Iran still has some useful friends elsewhere.
He won't be just a president, but someone whose performance shapes the country's political future for at least the next 10 to 20 years. Our citizens' psychological comfort and economic security are affected and take shape by the president's policies on economic issues as the country's senior executive manager. This is unanimously agreed upon. Society expects the same, so do our political elites, the incumbent government, and most importantly, the leader of the Islamic Revolution.
We popped out and learned what people think of shortcomings and what they expect of their next president.
One of the most serious problems is that people's purchasing power is very weak. There is tremendous economic pressure on them.
I expect the new president to care more about the youth. All the young people are unemployed. Some of them want to leave the country. They don't want to stay in Iran. The most urgent priority is employment.
Anyone who wants to be president in the new term, as the leader said, must be the most efficient politician and fully familiar with the flaws in the system.
One priority is the creation of jobs for young people, which has been very weak. The other is the astronomical prices. Another is enabling young people to get married. One of the main weaknesses of our current president is that he has not fulfilled any of his promises so far.
The least the next president is expected to do is to care for those who live in a poor economic situation.
People's most important demand is that the president be able to address their problems and create jobs.
Like many things related to Iran, its Guardian Council comes under international criticism in great part due to the country's system of governance being a new. It's a democracy with a name, an Islamic democracy. The Guardian or Constitutional Council as a legal body is not dissimilar to any other in the world. In France, the Constitutional Council is the highest constitutional authority.
The principle of supervision is observed by all countries, whether those in Europe, the US or elsewhere. But the methods differ according to the nature of the countries. Considering that our constitution has a religious basis, part of the responsibility of the Constitutional Council is to ensure that the resolutions don't violate religious laws. The Council's members generally are tasked with ensuring that the passed laws are based on the Constitution.
Its duties are first the supervision of elections and ensuring the legitimacy of referendums. That's going by Articles 58, 59, and 60. And second, the interpretation of the fundamental meanings of the Constitution, legislation, and treaties.
It is a Zionist thought to polarize the elections. The instance is Trumpism or Bidenism. They polarize the society, and instead of proposing their plans, they locked their horns and got involved in their private affairs, shouted and insulted each other. The result was that Congress came under a deadly attack. Our elections don't polarize the people. The election is multipolar. Different personalities are nominated and qualified, who later compete in a healthy environment and are chosen by the people according to their plans discussed during ethical debates.
To get back to Iran's Guardian Council and elections, the Council's 25th May approval of finalists meant those candidates could start campaigning until June the 16th, 2 days before the election. That would allow for a one-day period when campaigning is banned. Candidates will have three televised debates, which could swing the vote against all expectation, as they have done so with the past three presidents. The Interior Ministry has said it could extend voting until 2 a.m. on June the 19th, since the polls will not operate at full capacity in order to observe COVID-19 guidelines.
Reformists are now considering the options in a situation where their prominent nominees, including Mr. Esaq Jahangiri, Mr. Pezeshkian, Mr. Mohsen Hashemi, Mr. Shariat, and others, are rejected. They are probably planning to endorse the two reformist leading candidates for now and decide on who would withdraw from the race in favor of the other on the eve of the election day, based on their popularity in opinion polls.
That's it for today. Thanks from the whole team. But do tune in again at the same times next week and each week after, as there's plenty more to be said on the elections in weekly shows and even our 10-minute specials in the run-up to the election, 18th June. Bye for now.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Heartbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.